Hello, and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we have another rookie author. We've never interviewed her before. Her name is Lori Frankel. I think this is her second book. We'll ask her about that. Her new book is called Goodbye for Now. It's got some beautiful airplanes on the outside. It's really cool. And it's just out from Doubleday Books. Hello.
Hi, David.
We've never talked before.
We have not.
I always like having rookie authors on the show, authors I've never interviewed before.
Yeah, and it's fun. It's really fun.
And I know I get emails from people saying, "Well, what are you going to ask me?" Like they're so afraid of what I'm going to ask. It's like, don't worry, I don't want to get into your private life. I may ask about your family, but you know, I don't know what they're. It makes you think. Well, what are you worried I might ask?
Right. You know, writers I think like to do their homework. We're so used to doing research, we like to go into these things prepared.
Right. What I really like about this book is that it has so much heart to it. I mean, there's so much heart. The characters are really, really well drawn out, and they're real people. And I really, it's not like you read a book and sometimes you think, oh, these characters are not real to me. I can't even identify with them or understand why they act the way they do or everything in this. And some of the dialogue in this book is actually pretty funny.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, she had fun writing this book. Did you really have a lot of fun writing this?
I did. I loved writing this book. This one wrote very easily, and it was great. And thank you for saying that, because that's what I hope for. Good characters, good dialogue. That's what I look for when I read. So it's what I want also when I'm writing.
But at the same time, this is a very interesting book. It deals a lot with death.
Yes.
And yet it doesn't. You look at the front cover, you would never know that.
Right, yes.
You would never know it had anything to do with death.
Yes, I think that's true. I love the cover. I think they did a beautiful job with it. And I hope that the book is about death, but is also uplifting and hopeful. And I think that's what they were going for.
But it's about love, too. It's the hope of love, finding that one person that we can't live without.
Yeah.
Have you found that one person?
I have, yes.
Isn't
that nice for me?
Yeah, it's very nice for you.
I'm very, very lucky in this way.
But you're very talented as a writer. Obviously, you know how to tell a story, and I just like the way your characters go back and forth. There's a lot of scenes in here where the dialogue back and forth is fun to read.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And the dialogue's hard to write. I mean, interesting dialogue is not easy to write.
Yes, but I think I agree with you completely. I think dialogue is really hard because you're trying to do like two opposite things at once. One is making characters seem like real people, and then also being entertaining. You know, and I think that real people don't always have the perfect comeback, and they don't always say the perfect thing. And you want your characters in books to do those things.
And another thing I like about this book is when the title "Goodbye for Now," I didn't know what it meant. I'm like, now I have to know what this title's about.
Yeah.
And as you get into the story, you realize what the title really means.
Yeah.
I like that. I like the fact you did that. You leave, you know, things, and you do that with your chapters too. That's another thing I like about this book. The chapters have names.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, now I know. I have some kind of idea what this chapter is going to be about.
Yeah. I was doing that while I was writing it more as notes to myself than anything else. I wasn't really thinking I was going to keep them. And then they just became integral to the story as it went on, and so I kept them indeed.
It's right, and they're not the chapters aren't numbered.
No, right, exactly.
It's funny how my mind always goes to that. I'm like, I want numbers on the chapters.
Yeah,
come on.
Me too. Me too. I completely agree with you. And truly, I was only doing it as notes to myself. I was thinking of them more as section headings rather than chapter titles. But that's what they turned into as it went along. I was surprised also, but I really liked it in the end.
So why the theme of death? I mean, why is that such an integral theme in this book? And did you mean that? I mean, did you mean that from the very beginning for it to be like that?
I did. Well, you know, so the book is about a software engineer who invents a way for people to email and eventually video chat and otherwise electronically correspond with their dead loved ones. And so there had to be some dead loved ones, basically, in order to do that. I started with the idea of that technology. But one of the things that became clear pretty early on was that to do right by the characters, the deaths were going to have to be more than incidental. Because otherwise it just felt like cheating. It was a little bit cheap to just say, oh, well, someone died and these people are upset, but that's not really what I want to talk about. I realized that if that was going to be part of the story, then it really did need to be talked about. And it turned into being, as it went on, less about the technology anyway and more about the ways we mourn.
Right. Exactly. And there's one particular death scene in here that I can't describe, obviously, because it would give something away, but it's very vivid in my mind and probably will stay. I keep seeing it over and over in my head.
Yeah.
And I think you know the scene I'm talking about.
I probably do, yeah.
But the way you wrote that scene is amazing. That's the beauty of reading a book. It's the way the person writes that is so ingrained in your mind. It's not necessarily what they're saying. Anybody can write, well, so-and-so walked down the street and something happened to them, you know.
Right.
But the way you write a scene... And this scene in particular, you don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, oh my gosh. Oh.
Yeah.
It's quite shocking, and at the same time, it's kind of, wow. You just don't, it's beautifully written, too.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like surprise and shock are some of the hardest things to write in fiction, partly because the author knows where it's going and so isn't surprised. And partly because the things that we fall back on in other kinds of scenes, in like, you know, poetry and descriptive language and these kinds of things, don't work as well for shock and surprise. And so the scenes, I think, stand out because they're surprising and you don't see them coming, but also because they're told a different way than usual.
This book's going to resonate a while in the... I mean, it's one of those books I'm going to think about 5 years from now, probably, just remembering back on what it was like. I mean, I think to myself, well, what if I could communicate with my mother?
Yeah.
And the first thing I think of is, oh, how creepy would that be?
Yeah, right.
And I'm sure, do you find yourself having the same reaction, too?
Yes, I do. And in fact, that was much of the reason why I wrote it is, in the planning stages, I was pitching this to my agent, and she said, oh, I would never use that. Why would anyone use that? And, God, that hadn't even occurred to me. I thought, of course I would use this. I would definitely use this. I wish that it existed. And so...
Does it exist?
It's actually a lot closer than you'd think. You know, a lot of people have reacted in that, oh, I would never use it way, and it seems to me that's what makes it a good... That's what made it a good question for me. When I pitched it in the first place, the book, I was thinking it was going to be science fiction. And the closer we've gotten, the more real this is, this technology.
What you would call a science fiction novel.
Yeah. It is not. And the technology is actually, it's happening all the time. Facebook now has an app that you can use to write messages and send them after you've passed on to your loved ones.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's called If I Die.
Are you kidding? Wow.
No. There's a company called Dead Social where you can set up a whole, whole series of things for an avatar of you, basically, to do messages, Facebook, phone calls.
That would creep me out, I think.
To send to your loved ones after you've gone, and for years to come, so that you could say, you know, set up something to send a child a birthday wish every day, every year on their birthday from...
They made a movie out of that with Michael Keaton. What was that movie?
I don't know.
Where he left all this... He took all these films and showed him after he died. I can't remember the name of the movie now.
Me neither. I know what you're talking about, but I don't remember it either. They're doing exactly this. And, of course, you know, they're resurrecting stars now these days.
What was the intent of the book? Right.
I'm sorry.
I stepped on your words.
Oh, no, that's good.
I was wondering what your intent was. I mean, were you trying to entertain with the book? Were you trying to send a message to people?
Yes, both of those things, I think. I feel like always I want to entertain as a novelist. But also, I had some things to say, and some of it was, especially at the beginning, was in fact complaints about technology, and how much time we spend on Facebook and how much of our identities and our lives are lived online these days, that you start to think, you know, do I even really need to be there? Functionally, what is the difference between friends I only see on Facebook and people who don't, you know, who aren't even real? And those are the questions that I started with and that I think are interesting to think about. And as I got further into the book, it started to be sort of an interrogation of how we let go and how we mourn and how we deal with death. And those weren't things I necessarily intended in the beginning, but it seemed really useful to me as it went on.
What really is interesting, is, and if anybody hasn't read the book yet, and I hope you do, because it's really an interesting book. It's like nothing. This book's like nothing you've ever read before. It really is. To me, I've never read anything like this before, written quite this way, and just, it's one of those books that I started reading, and I thought, oh, I'm not sure about this one.
Yeah.
Not sure at all, and then I just found myself not being able to stop reading it.
Yeah, interesting. I think to authors it always feels unique, like no one has ever written this thing before that I am writing, but I do think that it doesn't fit as neatly into a genre or a package or a description as sometimes books do.
I mean, and the way that the world is now, with everything being online, everything, I mean,
yeah.
No matter what you can think of, you can do it online now.
Yes.
It's kind of, you know, it's kind of good and kind of scary at the same time.
Yes, exactly.
What the technology is that's out there is just, it just staggers the mind. I mean,
it does. Yeah, and it's astonishing. And to me, I feel like there's a lot of miracle there, and a lot of wonder, and a lot of really wonderful things that come out of that technology. And I certainly wouldn't give any of it up. And I want more all the time. But at the same time, there are huge costs to it, and I don't think that we talk about them very often, and that's dangerous, it seems to me.
Yeah, and at its heart, what really drives this novel is the love story.
Yeah.
The absolute love story that just runs through the whole book, and that's why everybody went to see Ghost, the love story.
Yeah.
That's why
yeah.
people love Titanic, the love story.
Yes.
Although I to be quite honest, I never really felt that love story in Titanic, that I never really felt that connection between those
yeah.
two. That I thought, you know how sometimes you just watch actors on in a movie and they just feel like they're connected somehow.
Yeah.
And then others don't. I never really felt that connection between Leonardo and Kate Winslet.
Yeah, interesting.
but you do feel between Sam and Meredith, and it's amazing when they go on their first date. It's amazing how things happen in this book.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for love stories myself, and it's what I'm always reading for, and it's something that I'm always wanting more of, personally, when I read. I wish there were more of the love story, and I wish there were more of the, of just being able to be with the love without the conflict,
right.
Which has to come in, but I always want more of the other part, in actually everything I read, but also, you know, when I watch television and when I watch movies and such. So I think that's what I wanted. That's what I always wanted.
And some of the best scenes in my head are later in the book when there is that conflict, when there is
yeah.
what, and I can't even describe it. I want to so bad, but I can't.
I appreciate that.
But, you know, that's what really gets to me. That's what really got to me reading this book, thinking, and we all do this when we read books. We think to ourselves, what would it be like for me to go through something like this?
Yeah.
What would that feel like for me? And do I ever want to experience that pain?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I mean, I think that's the high praise that you can give authors. Is I read this book and it made me think, what if it were me? What if I were living?
And will I ever be the same? That's the scary part.
Yeah.
That sometimes when there's a loss, that person will never be the same again. The
right.
one who lost, not necessarily the one who died. The one
yeah.
who has experienced the loss.
Right.
Will they ever be the same? And some people are just a shell of a human being after that, and it's scary.
Yeah.
My
yeah.
uncle was like that. When my aunt died, he there was nothing left of him. He was just, he just felt empty without her.
Yeah.
I mean, there. And to think that we all can have that. We can all have that love where we can't live without the other person. It's such a wonderful feeling when it's happening, but what would happen if we lost that person?
Right. Mm-hmm. It's scary. It's very scary.
It's something that you can't even bear to think about.
Right.
And yet, what happens with Ghost in that movie Ghost is he feels her even after she's dead.
Right.
Or wait, he's the one that's dying. He's the one that died, isn't he?
Yes. Yes, I think so.
Yeah, she's the one that's alive, and he's the...
Yeah, I think you're right.
And I've got that backward anyway, but that whole feeling that, you know, what would we do? How much pain can a human being take?
Yeah, yeah. And in the book, they all become a community for one another. They become, the survivors become their own family and their own support network, not because they've sought that out at all, but just because they are bonded by the possibilities of the technology. They go in to spend time with their loved ones, but really they're spending time with one another. And I think that's part of the answer to how you go on.
And why is it that women are so much better with dealing with compassion for another human being than men are? I mean, we men sometimes are so bad with compassion.
Interesting. I don't know. I think the men in this book are pretty compassionate. I think that probably...
Now, the friend... What's the friend's name now? I'm forgetting his name. The unusual guy from Hollywood.
Oh, Meredith's cousin, Dashiell.
Dashiell. He's pretty compassionate.
He is. He's pretty compassionate.
But he's gay, too, right?
He's bisexual, yes.
He's bisexual. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't get that he was bisexual.
Oh, yeah, he is. And Sam is also very compassionate, and Sam's dad is certainly very compassionate. So I think, but maybe in different ways, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of the answer to that question is roles, and that's some of what we find with the people who use Repose, the technology, is that they use it to fall into their old habits with their loved ones. And some of that is, well, I was the husband and I was the wife, and these are the roles that we performed. Not that anyone is incapable of doing the other, but that they didn't, because these relationships were what they were.
Was this a tough book to write?
No, this was an easy book to write.
Really?
Yeah.
Even with all the heavy themes, you didn't find yourself getting depressed?
No, this book just wrote itself, and so I think that the depressing parts of the book and the sad parts of the book were balanced out by my absolute glee at how quickly it was writing and coming together. I had worked on it the previous summer and not gotten very far, and it wasn't very good, and I had about 100 pages that all needed to be thrown away, and so I went and taught for the year and came back to it and thought, oh no, this is going to be a mess, and what if I can't write it, and what if I can't finish it, and then somehow I sat down and it told itself, so that was very, very
interesting.
Yeah.
I've heard other writers describe that feeling of books telling or writing themselves, sort of like all of a sudden you just know what to write.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you live in Seattle, so that's a really... How much rain does Seattle actually get?
Well, I tell you, for about 9 months a year, it gets quite a bit of rain. It's not so much inch-wise. It doesn't pour usually. It's just a sort of nonstop sod and drizzle, which is really unfortunate. But
see, my moods get I get very moody when it rains. I get kind of sad.
Yes, I mean, you get used to it. It's also quite dark because we're pretty far north, so in the winter it gets dark about 4:30. But in the summer, you see, on July 1st, it stops raining, and then it's gorgeous and clear and 80 degrees every single day all summer long, and it's light until 11.
Till when? Till when does that end?
End of September, maybe middle of October, we hope. Hopefully.
I see.
End of October.
Well, that's at least you have three months.
Yeah, and you know, I'm an East Coaster, so I am familiar with the...
But is there something about Seattle's rainy weather that's good, conducive to writing?
It is, I think. I think it is conducive to writing.
Do you like to write when it's pouring rain outside?
I do.
Why is that? That's kind of weird.
I mean, there's nothing else to do. You can't go outside.
I think so. I just called you weird. I can't believe I did that.
Oh, no, that's okay. That's quite all right. You're not the first. It's okay.
But what is that? I mean, I always think to myself, if I was going to write, I'd love to have a sunny day and be writing outside when it's sunny and pretty. and I can sit underneath the tree and watch the breeze through the trees. To me, that would be a perfect day to write.
Yeah, well, it is, except there's the glare off the computer screen.
Oh, I see. That stinking glare.
Outside, but it has to be shady because otherwise you can't really see. And to me, I think, oh, well, it's gross out anyway. I don't have a better offer. I can't instead go to the beach because it's disgusting outside. I might as well sit here and write. So I find it fairly motivating. And it's also pretty conducive to a mood.
Right. Because I know there's been a lot of authors that were, I mean, John Saul, I know, lived in Seattle for a long time. I don't know if he still does or not.
Yeah, we do. We have lots and lots of wonderful authors.
And I think even Elizabeth George was up there somewhere, too.
Yes, yeah.
So there's a lot of writers up there, and I just wonder what is so conducive about that area to write.
You know, some of it is it's a really wonderful writing community. Authors are very supportive of one another and very warm towards one another. I am a member of a group called the Seattle Seven Writers, which you'd think would be seven writers, but in fact it's more like 50. And we raise money for literacy efforts in the community, and also it's just a really supportive writing communities, that when I have questions and I don't know how to be an author, there are all of these people around who can...
But obviously you know what you're doing, because you write really well.
Yeah, thank you, I appreciate that. It's less the writing help that I need and more the being out in the world help. There's all of this business to being an author these days, in addition to the writing, and I've got the writing part down, but the business end of it is much harder for me.
Now, is this available in audio, I assume it's an ebook?
Yes, it's ebook. It's audio. It's
who does the audio?
Random House. Is that the question?
No, I mean who actually does the audio? Whose voice is it? I'm saying.
Oh, he's a wonderful actor. You know, I haven't heard it yet. Actually, it's Alf, but no one has sent it to me, so I haven't heard it yet. His name is. Oh, I'm so sorry. I have forgotten his name because I've known him to do other things, and he does a wonderful job. But I haven't heard this one yet.
I should have mentioned that. I didn't know I was going to ask you about that, but I got because this book has a lot of voices in it. So I'm curious to hear how it would sound in audio.
Yeah, I'm interested too. Actually,
do you know that you're talented? I mean, can you see that about yourself?
Oh, gosh, that's a good and hard question. Some days I can, and some days it's harder. I can when I'm writing. The writing part is...
Well, you make it sound easy, though. You said this book was easy to write.
This book was easy to write, and that's the sort of thing that makes you think, gosh, I must be talented, because I just sat down and look what happened.
Yeah, this kind of book is not easy to write. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot of perspective in this book. There's a lot of things happening. There's a lot of dialogue.
Yeah. Yes. And that's the sort of thing that you sort of look back at the end of the writing day, and particularly at the end of, like, the second edit, and you think, wow, I must be a genius because I wrote this thing. And then there's the whole process of the book coming out, which at least convinces me that I just must be an absolute hack. So you know, there's that balance, which is probably good for people. Some days you think, I'm just terrifically talented. So
I think you're the first writer that...
I don't bother getting out of bed.
I think you're the first writer that's ever said to me that they could see their own talent.
Yeah, interesting.
Because most writers will not say that. I mean, the writers that I have interviewed so far have not said that. They'll say, well, I guess they don't want to appear like they're full of themselves.
Yeah. I think that most writers must think they're talented because otherwise they wouldn't do it. It's not an easy job. It's not usually especially lucrative. So I have to assume that people do it because they think they have something to say and they believe that they say it well.
There has to be some kind of movie interest in this book.
Yeah, the film Rights of Soul, yeah.
Already?
Yeah, they've been optioned. Almost, actually, it was, you know, weeks after the book itself sold.
Oh, that's neat.
It is neat, yeah.
Is it somebody famous attached to it?
Lionsgate is doing it.
Oh, Lionsgate.
Temple Hill, Summit Entertainment, Lionsgate.
But are there any famous actors or actresses attached to it?
Oh, they're not there yet. They are working on the screenplay at the moment.
Oh, that's so exciting. I can't wait to see it.
Long and involved process.
Are you somehow fascinated with airplanes, too?
No.
Where's the airplane theme come from?
You know, I put the airplanes in so they'd have something pretty to put on the cover, and they did, so it was great.
That's really why you did it?
Yeah, that's why I did it.
And I thought, when I was thinking about doing the interview, I thought, she's got to have something to do with airplanes. She must like airplanes.
No, I didn't. I mean, I thought it was a nice character quirk. And it certainly became thematic after I wrote it.
And it seems perfect for Meredith. For some reason, it just seems to fit her.
Yes. Well, that's because that's what I had first. She grew up around that idea. I thought, I shall have this female character make model airplanes and hang them from the ceiling.
And you know what really fascinates me? The reaction Meredith's mother has to the technology.
Yes. That was my agent, basically. That was the whole half of the population who say, oh my gosh, I would never use this. I can't imagine why anyone would. It's a terrible idea. And that wasn't clear to me until my agent reacted that way. And so she was a later addition, that character.
Now you have me curious as far as what, you said you threw 100 pages out. I'd love to know what was in those 100 pages.
I don't even know if I can remember exactly what was in
there. But how does an author know when something doesn't fit in a book? Is it just something you just realize?
You know, a lot of what was in those 100 pages was exploration of the technology itself, which I think was work that I had to do and had to work through so that fiction could be consistent and
right.
Do all the things that I needed it to do. But in the end, it was boring, and so it didn't need to actually be in the book.
Yeah, it's just I was just curious what it was, because I, you know, something more in the book that I. It's like when you watch a movie in the theater, and then you find out when it comes out on video that they've added extra footage, and you think, well, now I got to watch the whole movie again to see the extra footage, and will I remember?
Yeah.
What the extra footage is? Probably not.
I mean, this was just background work. It was almost research work. It was just research work that took the form of prose and my writing it.
And we all know when you watch a movie on DVD, the deleted scenes are rarely worth watching.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Except for one movie. There's one movie that I thought the deleted scene really had a powerhouse impact, and that was The Sixth Sense.
Oh, yes.
There's one scene that they deleted, which I think should have been in the movie, was really powerful.
Yeah.
But that's the only movie I can think of that I saw the deleted scene for and actually thought that there was one deleted scene I'm glad I got to see.
Yeah, interesting. I think that it would be an interesting thing to start doing with novels, particularly if people are reading them online, and you could just have, you know, you could hover over a link, and it would pop up a deleted chapter. But I think, at least for me, I would never consent to it. The stuff that has to go. And I feel like I more often read novels where I think, oh, I wish more had been cut from this than the opposite feeling, like, oh,
yeah,
something is missing.
I think a lot of it has to do with how well you like the writing, too.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I remember an Elizabeth George book that was over 700 pages long, and it was all about, it had something to do with a violin, and I remember sitting in my garden reading this book, just enjoying it immensely. And, you know, they're just authors that have perfect writing for me, just writing that I really look forward to every single time. Now,
yeah.
Your book is just so fascinating from now I can't say that it was fascinating from the very first page, but it did catch me pretty early and didn't let go till the end.
Yeah, that's good.
And I found I was reading it slowly too.
Yeah, interesting. I'm a very slow reader. I read almost everything slowly.
And I'm very envious of people who can read fast.
Yeah.
Because they're reading more books than I am.
Right. So much more done.
So you're a slow reader too?
A very slow reader.
But you're not a slow writer. That's interesting.
Yeah, I haven't been. I don't know. We'll see what the next one brings.
What was your favorite scene to write in this book without giving anything away?
I don't know. The thing that I worked on earliest and latest and longest is the Not Sam chapter. The chapter where they first figure there's got to be a way to have a living person and a dead person video chat based on that other person's archive. And and they go through it a bunch of times, and it never works, and it works horribly. And I love that scene because the way in which it doesn't work is pretty funny. But also, it does this really important thing, which is set up the rules of the technology. And so I wrote that very early on, and it was also the last thing I was working on. It's one of those things that, and I'm still not quite sure I got it quite right. It was just a scene that I kept coming back to and back to and back to.
Well, I have to ask this question. I have no idea how you're going to answer it. How do you feel about your children being able to talk to you after you're dead like that? I mean, how would you feel about that?
I don't know. I'm sort of with the argument that one of the characters makes late in the book, that it is comforting because you don't have to think of yourself as really gone. There will be some of you left, and while you won't, in fact, in any way experience it, if your children want to use it, it would still be a comfort to them. My son is 4, so it's very difficult for me to imagine him. I mean, I can't even imagine him at 7, and never mind, you know, as an adult, as an old person.
Yeah.
And of course, the technology will have changed completely by then.
You're now reminding me of that Elton John song where he says it's a shame that we have to age.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it is, and it also isn't.
You think there are moments in little kids' lives where they're just so cute.
Yeah.
and they're not trouble, and they're full of questions, and they're just cute to be around. And why would you want that to change?
Yeah. But it's also, I mean, I love to think, oh, someday he'll be able to read, and that's very exciting to me. And someday he will be able to write, and that's exciting. And someday he'll know how to swim, which he doesn't know how to do yet. And all of those things are.
Do you plan on writing like 25 books?
I don't know. I hope I plan on writing more books, and I don't have an end in sight for writing books. I hope to continue to write books for the rest of my life. Don't know how many that ends up being.
Now, what you had another book. Didn't you have another book that was published?
I did. Yes, my first novel is called The Atlas of Love.
And what was that about?
That is about three friends who raise a baby together.
Oh.
Yeah, so a very different book, although in some ways I feel like it's still that theme of non-traditional families, of people who come together and become family, even though they are not, in fact, blood-related.
Now, is your grandmother like Livy?
Yes. My grandmother, well, Livy is a composite of both of my grandmothers, but she has a great many things in common with my mother's mother.
I'm just so fascinated by this book. I mean, and because it's a fun book to talk about after you're done. It's one of those ones you can't wait to talk about it with somebody. I highly recommend anybody out there who wants to read it for their book group, because it's
thematically, I will be happy to video chat with people. Book groups, book about video chat, where in we can video chat.
Because you're going to get a lot of different opinions about this book, and that's what makes it fun. I mean,
I hope so.
I mean, people still argue about the ending of what was that Jodi Picoult book? The one they made the movie out of. It's a very powerful book too. Now I can't think of the name of it.
I don't know.
The one where the one sister has cancer.
Oh right, it's called My Sister's Keeper.
Right, My Sister's Keeper. There's a very controversial ending scene in that book. And, you know, that's what makes books worth talking about. Now, if we all loved them and everybody loved them the same, how boring would that be?
Right, yeah. It's true.
But I guarantee if you have 12 people in a book club for this book, you're going to have 12 different reactions to it.
I hope so.
But I think it's that's what I love to think about this book. It's one of those books that makes you think, what if? What would this be like for me? And how would I feel if somebody could see me after I was dead on a video chat?
Yeah.
And my first reaction is, by far, is, ugh, I don't know if I want that.
Right.
Will my hair look okay?
Right.
Things like that.
and it's a little hard to get your head around not being there to see it. Because really the answer is that it probably doesn't matter because you're not going to be there.
I can't wait to see what kind of mail you get on this book.
Yeah.
I wish I could read some of it.
Yeah. I hope that people will be.
You should, you should post some of those letters on your website.
Oh yeah, that's an interesting idea. That's a really good idea, actually.
I'd love to see what people would say. I think everybody. I mean, and once you all read this book out here, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people reading this book.
I hope.
Because it's just so interesting. But I to get people's reactions, and what do you think of it? What do you? I described it to a woman at work today, and she said, I said to Nan, you would never read this book. She said, you're right, I wouldn't. Because of the theme of it. But, you know, but that never stops me from reading a book.
Yeah.
What determines whether I continue reading a book is, do I believe the characters? Is it interesting enough? Am I interested in the subject matter? And how does it make me feel? All those kinds of things.
Yeah. At the beginning, I thought it was going to be more about these topics and controversies and the would you use it or wouldn't you use it and all of that theme that runs throughout the book and subject matter that runs throughout the book. But as the more I wrote, the more it really stopped being about that and just started being about the characters and their lives and reactions.
And the characters are great.
Yeah.
I love the scene where Meredith says to Dash that he's got to come right now. She needs him right now. And, you know, that's so unusual for a book. I don't remember the last time one character ever said that, you know, you've got to come right now. I need you here for. I mean, we're all here in this world for each other. I mean, and this is how I feel.
I hope so.
And, you know, if we don't have somebody we can lean on, if only somebody we can call up and say, look, I'm having a really crappy day and I need to talk to you.
Yeah.
That's a very comforting thing.
It is. It is, and it's what I want out of.
And it can't always be our husbands and wives. Sometimes it needs to be somebody else.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Because I know my father never could understand. Like, I've had depression in my life, and he could never understand what depression was and why you would get depressed.
Yeah.
Because if you've never experienced it, you have no idea what it's like and what to do about it.
Yeah.
But it's a very heavy thing, and I think most of us have had some form of it in some way, especially with the economy the way it's been. But, you know, we need each other. I mean, there are people that I need to call, and I need to say, look, I love hearing your voice. And how nice is that? How many people say that to you in the course of a day? Probably not very many.
No, not very many. And I feel like that's the beauty of fiction, is that people can say what they... People can say the things that you can never quite bring yourself to say in life.
Well, now I'm totally fascinated. Yeah, I'm totally fascinated by what you're going to write next.
Oh, thank you. me too.
I mean, because this is a heavy one, and I'm thinking, is the next one going to be heavier? Is it going to be lighter? Is it
I don't know.
What's she going to write next?
I bet you it's going to be. I don't know. It's still in its marinating phase, I guess. Things thought about, but I bet it's going to be lighter.
Doubleday's a pretty major.
I love Doubleday. They've been wonderful.
They're a pretty major publisher. I'm wondering what their reaction was when you first handed it in.
They were very excited. They were very excited, and they have continued to be very excited and enthusiastic about this book.
That's great.
Yeah.
Because when you hand a manuscript in, you must think to yourself, oh my gosh, did I dot all my T's and cross, dot all my I's and cross all my T's? Yeah. I knew I was going to say that wrong. But does it look okay? Did I spill juice on it or anything?
Yeah.
All those little things that we worry about that seem so minor.
Right.
But,
I mean, it was nerve-wracking when it went.
But the beauty of this book, Lori, is that your voice comes very strong in it. It's got a really distinctive voice to it. And I think that's wonderful, and it's beautiful. In some ways, this book is very beautiful. I mean, there's many scenes that are fun to read.
Oh, thank you.
Not necessarily easy to read.
Yeah.
But fun nonetheless.
Yeah, it turned out to be a harder book than I necessarily intended it to be.
And sometimes we think, well, this stuff could happen to me, and what am I going to do if it does happen to me? And, but we all need to ask ourselves that more often, I think. And
and that's what I always do when I read fiction. I don't know if that's true for everyone, but it doesn't matter what I'm reading about. That's what I'm thinking about.
And
to decide what I would do in this situation.
Like this was last Wednesday, last Thursday. I was at work, and I looked over and the woman was sitting in our restaurant part, and she didn't have either hand. She had no hands.
Yeah.
And you don't see that very often. And the first thing I thought to myself is, how would people accept me if I looked like that? And it's really powerful to think that. You think to yourself, would somebody really still accept me if I didn't have hands?
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a horrifying thought. And all I could think of was, that poor woman, what she must go through.
Right. Yes. But maybe not. Maybe it isn't. It doesn't impede her life, or maybe she's used to it, or maybe
she is. But it's very hard. It's very hard to sit and look at that. And for me, anyway, I don't know about everybody else, but we have to. There are some really horrible things that happen in our lives, and we see it all around us. Things that happen to other people. Sometimes they happen to us, and you know how do we react to that?
Yeah. And this, I think, is the business of novels. Is the business of fiction is to take those things and play them out.
Well, what a tribute to you that you can sit and entertain people for 300 pages and tell a really interesting story and tell a very controversial story.
Well, thank you so much.
And have people.
Very kind of you.
And have people talk about it.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you like to be put right down in the middle of the book club and listen to what people were saying?
I can't decide. I would either love it or it would be completely torturous. Possibly both. But yes, I would love to know more about what people.
But isn't it better that your books are talked about than that they're not talked about?
Yes, it is. And I personally like books where there are questions and ambiguity, and where things are questions are asked of me but not necessarily answered.
Did you think of this title before or after you wrote the book?
Actually, this is not my title.
It's a very fitting title.
Yeah, I'm glad you like it. I called the book Dead Mail while I was writing it.
Oh, Dead Mail, yeah. No, that's a little
loved.
Bit. I'm glad it wasn't called that.
Indeed, the consensus was that was not a good title for a book, that it was too much of a downer, basically. They did not want the word dead in the title. And so I sent a giant, giant list of other possibilities, and this is the one that they liked. And I like it, too.
And you had already finished the book by then.
I had, yes. That's right. The book was completely done at that point.
Because that's interesting. When you're reading a book and you realize why the title is the title, you think, well, they must have done that while they were writing the book. You know, that's what
isn't that interesting? I think that's why it was a good title, is because it did fit and it did work, and there were seeds. That were planted.
Is it your feeling that when you write in order to write well, you have to identify with all your characters?
Yes. Personally, yes. Absolutely. Also, to read well, personally.
But aren't there sometimes characters that get out of hand, characters that run off from what you originally intended them for, and just do things that are worse than you intended?
Yes. And to me, that's what makes them good, relatable characters, is when they start doing things on their own. When they surprise me, when I'm writing and I have these moments where I think, oh my gosh, I did not see that coming. That's fantastic. And I feel like that's what tells you that you have written good, real characters, is when they start to be people who do things on their own without my pulling the strings.
Do you think your next book will be as controversial as this one?
I don't know.
I mean, do you hope it will be?
I don't know that either. That's a very good question.
You really don't know much about your next book, do you?
For me, books always start off in a place where they want to say something, where there is this point that I want to make, there is this thing that I want to say. And so I guess that often does yield controversy. And so I think there's a pretty good chance that it will be similarly controversial. But in the end, I think that, well, I don't know. I wonder how controversial this one will be. I wonder how many people will read it and think very strongly one way or the other way.
Now, I'm wondering about you. I haven't really asked much about you. And you said you have a family. And you do read a lot, obviously.
I do.
And what else do you do? I mean, are you a mother? So you're a housewife too, I assume.
Yes, right? Of course, I'm a wife, I'm a mother. I do have a house.
What do you do when you need to get away from writing?
So until last June, I was teaching college full time.
Oh wow!
Yes. So it used to be that I wrote during the summers, and then I'd go back to teaching in the fall, and then I'd teach all year until.
Well, when did this idea first come to you? Was it last summer for this book?
No. So in the book, the technology comes when Meredith's grandmother dies, and she thinks it's really too bad that we can't at least keep emailing each other. And that's what happened to me when my grandmother died. We had emailed each other quite a bit. We were very close. And I thought, okay, I understand that, you know, that I can't have her back. But it just seems like really easy bit of technology to write a software program that could fake her emails. And that seemed like a really great idea to me. And I sat with that idea for a couple of years, which is kind of ridiculous because I am not a software engineer. I do not develop programs. I do not know anything about it. Before I thought, no, this is actually a book, not a piece of technology. And that should have come to me a lot sooner than it did, but it took a while.
Interesting. Yeah. It's just interesting. It's just so interesting to hear about this whole process of how you wrote the book. And I knew it would be. I knew it would be very interesting because if the book's interesting, you know the author's got to be interesting.
You know, I'm always interested in hearing people's process stories. Even if sometimes if I haven't liked the book, I'm still interested in knowing how it came about. Process stories are always fascinating, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, you had an agent for the other book already, so
yeah.
This was part of the contract for the other book, too?
Wasn't part of the contract, but I did have an agent, and she is wonderful, and so I'm very lucky to have her.
I hear
the whole process much easier.
We have a girl at work who's trying to get her book published, and what she goes through. I mean, she tells me all the process. Well, they'll say, well, you got to change this, you got to change that. There's so much involved with getting a book published.
Yes.
And I think to myself, wow, it's just so impressive to get it published.
Yeah, it's true. It's a crazy, crazy business. And it's a very emotional one, and it's a very difficult, wonderful thing to do.
But, you know, when they're tearing what you've written apart, I mean, the way it is now, I see no reason to change anything in the book. It's wonderful the way it is, and I wouldn't change anything. And I think, what is the process to get it to there? I mean, how?
Yeah.
How? And then I think to myself, Nora Roberts, who writes three or four books a year, how the heck does she do it?
I mean, I have absolutely no idea. I mean, absolutely none. It seems amazing to me that people can write that.
So, kudos to her for being able to do it.
Yeah.
How she does it?
I do not know.
I've heard people ask her, you know, when is your book done? And she'll say, when it's done.
That,
that's really what she says. I mean, it's just when it's done. She doesn't talk about her writing process a lot. But wouldn't you love to hear about it?
I would, yes. Or watch it happen. It's just amazing.
If only you could ask it in the same way you'd like to ask Tom Cruise some questions, too, you know. So.
Yes. I mean, always these questions I think are really, really fascinating.
It's been so much fun to talk to you. I hate to stop the interview because we're having so much fun.
Well, thank you so much. Me too. I've had so much fun. It's been lovely to do it.
Yeah, and the book again is called Goodbye for Now, and don't miss it because it's really quite moving, and you're really going to find it fascinating. And there's some blurbs on the back too. That you've got some really nice blurbs on the back, which is really nice. It's available in all your bookstores now as an e-book. Doubleday is the publishing company. You can get it as an e-book and, like you said, an audio.
Yes.
This has been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And the author's name, again, is Lori Frankel, and I hope you go buy it in all your bookstores. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.